This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
We often think that the general election is when we can make our voices heard at the ballot box. But in a lot of places, elections aren't actually that competitive. And voting in a certain party's primary can matter a lot more for who ultimately represents you. That's been true for decades in most of Alabama. Until now, a new congressional map drew a new district, District 2, that brought out 19 candidates to choose from. That's something Alabama doesn't see often in its elections, and we went down there to talk about it with Alabama voters. Today, we're bringing you a conversation we had in Birmingham, Alabama. This conversation was part of our Remaking America collaboration with six partner stations across the country, including WBHM. Remaking America looks at the state of our democracy and trust in our government. In a democracy, why are competitive elections important, and how much power do voters have? We hear that discussion taped a few days after Alabama voted in the Super Tuesday primaries after the break. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. We'll be back in just a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
With us here on stage is Taphne English Ralph. She's the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Alabama State Office. Taphne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Stephanie Butler. She's the treasurer of the Alabama League of Women Voters and a board member of the Greater Birmingham League. Stephanie, it's great to have you.
Glad to be here.
And Pete Jones. He's a professor of public administration at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Pete, welcome.
Thank you.
Taphne, why is District 2 a more competitive district compared to other parts of the state?
Well, I really want to just say how once the Supreme Court ruled, we were really ecstatic. Being a native Alabamian, to have a second congressional district drawn that would have representation for black residents of the second congressional district was so important. It provides such another opportunity for their needs to be heard, not only statewide, but also at the national level as well. And so where we were packed into one district, having that second district and additional representation again was key. The fact that the race was competitive was also very telling, right? It was very telling about Alabama. We know most of the time local elections, people are running unopposed, or there's not a lot of interest in running, or voters feel that they don't have choices that they can vote for. So to have the number of candidates in this race demonstrated to us, one, that there was an eagerness and a hunger to be the voice for the second congressional district.
Pete, how have Alabama's previous maps shaped the state's representation in Congress?
I mean, we've been 6-1, a Republican-dominated state for over a decade. And as you were pointing out, it really does turn off voters. I mean, it's in a sense, those elections were so safe for the incumbents a lot of time that they really didn't have to engage voters in a way that you normally would in an election. You didn't really have to, distance yourself from another candidate in the primary. You also didn't really have to engage with your challenger all that much. And so I think to Taphne's point, I mean, that really left a lot of voters just used to, well, it doesn't necessarily matter because we know we're going to send that same person back. And this was for both Democrats and Republicans. District 7 was a safe seat for Representative Congresswoman Sewell. It was a safe seat for the other districts, too. And so I think really for kind of shaping Congress, you know, we do get a lot of federal support. Aside from that, we didn't really think we had a huge voice or that it was really representative of those districts because, you know, the incumbents were really going back if they wanted to.
And what about the way that representation in Congress reflected or didn't reflect the demographic makeup of the state?
Yeah, that was big. I mean, we our state is comprised of 27% African Americans, and we, you know, had one African American Congress representative, and so, you know, primarily we were sending white representatives in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, and so it really, you know, in terms of the racial makeup, which right was what the maps were overturned for, not representative whatsoever, but also in terms of a whole host of other things, right? Predominantly male, predominantly from, you know, rural areas where we had maybe had more, you know, growing in the metros with Huntsville and Mobile and some other places. And so really some, just across different aspects, we were leaving out a lot of voters.
Well, Stephanie, the Alabama Secretary of State says about 800,000 people showed up in the primary this year to vote. How does that compare to previous years?
I've been looking specifically at the turnout in the rural counties of District 2, and I was disappointed to see that turnout was down. In the reporting that I saw in Jefferson County, which is where I live, turnout was down. It was pretty much down all around the state, which is a little bit discouraging. And it's especially discouraging in District 2, where we're really hoping that the opportunity to vote for somebody who will represent the interests of African Americans will motivate people to vote. But we also have to accept that they haven't had that opportunity in their lifetimes and possibly even their parents' lifetimes. It's been a long time since they knew that they had an opportunity to speak their voice.
Yeah, Pete?
I'll say statewide. So in 2016, we were at a 41% turnout. Big Republican field, right? This was when Trump was making his move. 2020, 33%. Again, we're a Republican-dominated state, and so you're not going to have a bunch of people turn out when you've got an incumbent Republican with not much many challengers. 20.5% across the state this year. So we're at half of what we were with 2016, which again, you would expect without a bunch of Republican challengers. But essentially, you know, you've gotten a half the voter turnout that you did in competitive years, where folks really had a choice in who was going to be their president. And so I think it's really telling that as we've kind of coalesced around the Republican Party essentially runs all three branches of government, and then they've really aligned with Trump in so many ways that voters, both sides, right, Republicans and Democrats, aren't coming out to vote because they don't think their choice really matters. They think it's going to be Trump, and why go vote? Why spend my Tuesday doing that?
I mean, Taffney, it also makes me wonder, though, about those non-top-of-ticket races and how people feel about the power of their vote when it comes to something like city council or the clerk that's going to represent them in any given area. Do you see a connection there as well?
Definitely. I think that that's been a connection, you know, for the last decade. And one of the things that we're doing at Southern Poverty Law Center through a campaign of Beyond the Vote is really educating community, specifically our young voters and voting age, about those roles and the impact that local elections have on opportunities for these communities. And so what we're looking at with our Beyond the Vote campaign is really engaging and educating the community about the roles that local government play. And then, as we really think about increasing civic engagement across the board, that's also increasing those who are wanting to run for elected positions on the local level. And several of those positions in Alabama oftentimes go unopposed for years. I was just sharing with someone, I grew up in Talladega County in a small rural community, and it's been the same mayor since I was in middle school. He took a four-year sabbatical, but he's back. He's the mayor now, and I'll, you know, I graduated high school in 1992.
Me too.
Yeah. So, and that's the picture that is painted, and that's the picture also that our young people are seeing. So, you know, even wanting to return home, the opportunity to do that, they choose to stay other places because there has not been that change at the local level.
Mm-hmm. So voters had 8 Republicans or 11 Democrats to choose from in District 2 in the primaries. Why do you think it's important that that new district had so many people raising their hand for this election? Pete, I want to hear from you first.
One, it was exciting to see so many people, but I think different reasons for different parties. On the Republican side, you really had a lot of folks who realized this is all eyes are going to be on District 2 come November. This is, in many ways, with the razor-thin margins in Congress, District 2 could decide some things in ways that Alabama has not mattered in quite a while. And so for the Republican side, it's a great opportunity to make a name and really move up into national politics. And I know the candidates are not going to say that. They're going to say, you know, they're there for the people and to represent them. But it really is a great opportunity. For Democrats, because the state has been Republican-controlled for so long, there are not many opportunities like this that come along. If you're a popular mayor, if you are, you know, well-liked in the state house, to move up, you basically had District 7 before the map was overturned. And so now you've got twice as many opportunities, but it's still only 2. And so you've got all of those people who had been in politics for so long, this was finally their chance. And they weren't going to, I don't think they were going to, you know, miss it.
Hey, Taffney, take a step back for us and help us understand the mechanisms that made so many races in Alabama uncompetitive.
I think it goes back to historically who has always maintained power and control in Alabama. As I said, I grew up same mayor, same representative. Like, I heard the name. It was a household name, right? And oftentimes in conversations, I know when I was a voting age, I started asking questions of my family members. I was like, well, why do you keep voting for this person? Like, what are they doing? I don't see the impact. I don't see the change. Very curious. And the notion was, well, I mean, they're not going to do anything anyway for us. And so I think when you hear that in conversation that passes from generation to generation, specifically in a place like Alabama, I recently relocated from Montgomery and moved to the northern part of the state. And one of the things that I said to my husband when we moved, I said, oh my goodness, who am I going to vote for? Like, that was the first thing on my mind. It was so important to me that we relocated to a place where I felt confident that I was voting for someone who represented me, who was aligned with my voice and my values, and also with my daughter returning home from Boston. I wanted her to be inspired when we went to the polls. And, you know, I was excited that she came over to vote for me with me, but she was like, all right, let's go do this thing. Like, she was not energetic about it at all. But to Pete's point, they are getting it, and what's important to them are the issues, right? They are not concerned about the level of division and the polarization from parties. Our young people are really concerned about critical issues, and they want to maintain, they want to be home. They want to contribute to Alabama. They want to be leaders in Alabama, but they also want an Alabama that will represent them and their voice and their values, and we're not seeing that.
Can I jump in real quick? Taffney is right, and what is striking to me in talking to students, culture wars don't resonate with them. It is the critical issues, and I've thought a lot about this, and I've tried to figure it out, and part of me thinks they went through the pandemic, and they saw the adults arguing about all kinds of things, but they saw their classmates struggling, or they were struggling themselves, and so we're finally getting those folks into the electorate, and they're looking around going, why are they fighting over what books I get to read when I've struggled to to be able to read by third grade, or, you know, my little brother is doing this in school, or we're struggling with poverty or whatever it is. And it's so striking to me just how, you know, at the difference between generations, the things that matter. Yeah, Taffany's 100% right. The culture war stuff doesn't resonate with them. Like, they want to get down to, why are we doing this? Let's get down to business and do some things.
And I don't feel comfortable blaming it all on the voters either. In Alabama, we have some real systems issues. And I'm not sure if it's which one's the chicken, which one's the egg, but between gerrymandering and a failure of political vibrancy, we just don't have competition in a lot of places. With IVF being such a popular issue, I think it's important for people to know that we currently have 5 seats that are coming up for re-election. That's 5 of the 9. The only place where there is competition is for the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court. There will be 1 Republican and 1 Democrat running. In the other 4 seats, not a single one of them is going to be decided in the general election. They've already been decided. Place 1, it was an uncontested Republican candidate, no Democrat, and place 2, 3, and 4, the incumbents ran unchallenged. So that's just a failure of political vibrancy. And if people care about that issue, they have no motivation. This election didn't motivate them to show up and vote because they can't make a difference on that issue.
But like you said, it's a chicken or egg question. Is it the system not working for people that leads to the political vibrancy? Or is there a loss of political vibrancy that allows systems that don't work to stay intact? And Taffany, do you have any thoughts about that?
I think it's a combination of both, right? And it also goes back to education and who can run, right? Who can run for office? What does that look like? And we don't do enough of educating around that. Oftentimes when we see politicians, it is they're coming around to get the vote and they're going to tell you what they can do for you, right? No one is mentoring others to come up in this political arena, right? And then when you've lived in an area where there has not been substantial change and a reflection or representation of all, when you have a generation or two, right, who does not feel represented, who feels powerless, they're not going to want to sit in a seat that they have watched for decades and decades and decades not serve the people, right? And so that is where a lot of the education comes in. This is what your county commissioner's role is. This is the power that they possess. This is what you could actually change in your community, right? This is what your city council, even down to the boards, right? We were talking about the banning of books. Who's sitting on your local board at the public library? Who's sitting on the board of the electric commission? Who's sitting on the water board, right? We're seeing in Alabama where a lot of the water boards are being privatized. And we're also doing some of this work at Southern Poverty Law Center, but they're being privatized and citizens who can't even make a livable wage are receiving water bills that are $200 and $300. Some to the, like, it's astronomical. And then looking at all of those factors and being educated on if you were in this position or if you turned out to vote to flip the seat, to run against someone who's unopposed, that in itself is power. And it's power that we have to educate, and let the community know that they have this power.
We're listening back to a conversation about competitive elections from our recent trip to Alabama. Coming up, we hear more from voters in Alabama about why they do want more choices in their elections. Stay with us.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial, a member FDIC.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Amgen, a biotechnology pioneer leading the fight against the world's toughest diseases such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, and osteoporosis. In a new era of human health, Amgen continues to accelerate the pace of change, operating sustainably and drawing upon deep knowledge of science to push beyond what's known today. With each decade, they reliably deliver powerful new therapies to patients. Learn more at Amgen.com.
Many of you made your way to the polls over the last few weeks, but how much choice do you feel you really have when you make a mark on your ballot? For some voters in Alabama, they had plenty of choices between 8 Republicans or 11 Democrats in the state's 2nd congressional district. That kind of competition is something Alabama doesn't see often in its elections. We traveled to Birmingham, Alabama, to find out how voters feel about their choices this election year, from their leaders at home to the ones they send to Washington. And we're sharing some of that conversation with you. Let's get back to it.
Charles is here tonight, and Charles says first-past-the-post voting schemes seem to be a huge reason that we don't have competition in elections. Do any of the panelists find any interest within our state for alternative voting methods, such as Maine's ranked choice ballot system, either within primary or general elections? And just know, first-past-the-post voting is a system where voters cast a vote for a single candidate, and the candidate with the most votes wins the election. Pete, I'll come to you first.
I don't know a ton of people who are clamoring for the ranked voting. I mean, obviously, it does encourage coalitions. It does encourage different types of candidates. But to the question, I don't see it happening anytime soon because I don't know that the state could jump to that in any ways. And I worry that our voters would almost be too much of a jump.
Stephanie, your thoughts?
I don't mean to sound defeatist, but in Alabama, we don't have the same kinds of choices that people do in other states. A lot of people have citizens' initiatives to force amendments onto the ballot. We don't have that option in Alabama. So unless we can lobby our legislature for any kind of change, it's not coming.
I want to welcome Todd to the microphone. If you can make your way down to one of the mics. And you have a question about voting. Go ahead, please.
It's more of a statement than a question, honestly. But I'd like to hear your thoughts. If a state like Alabama actually cared and wanted people to vote, would we not make it easier as a fundamental start? Whether when people sign up for a driver's license, you're pre-enrolled, and it's a de facto statement. I think the question that y'all asked previously about, you know, is it a chicken or egg, is maybe not the right question, because if fundamentally everyone doesn't have access to vote, isn't the chicken and egg question almost a secondary concern? Thank you.
Todd's question was, if a state like Alabama truly wanted all citizens to vote, would state officials not pre-enroll Alabamians while they were, like, for instance, registering for their driver's license, essentially ensuring that everyone is registered? So let's start there. Taffney?
It would be ideal. It really would be ideal. And I think, you know, as we look at what's happened in Alabama, starting with the Shelby v. Holder case, right, that basically gutted voting rights here in Alabama. And then now here we are, fast forward 2024, and we're still creating barriers for individuals to get out to vote. Right now, SB 1, it has passed the Senate, which actually will make it a felony if you assist someone with an absentee ballot. And so you're looking at a you're looking at a felony, whether it's B or C, you're looking at a felony. And so Alabama continues to show that voters don't matter, at least not all voters matter. And so they make it very difficult for individuals to vote. We know years ago they had the whole ID thing. Now, you know, college students aren't able to use college IDs. I mean, and the list just goes on and on.
Where do you see places where voters maybe have more power than they may recognize?
Well, I think it goes back to what you were talking about earlier with, and Taffy and Steffi made really important comments. And I'm so glad you asked this question because I finally get to talk about like poll workers and local elections and how that matters. And I think it matters at local elections. And essentially, Alabama, our political leaders will want that to happen, will want to automatically register people when turnout matters. Right now it doesn't. One party state, it doesn't matter if 5 people show up because we know that candidate is going to win. They're going to win 4-1 instead of 400,000 to 100, whatever it might be. And so once turnout matters, and it's going to start mattering in District 2, it's going to matter in a lot of local elections, that's when they're going to say, okay, we want to get more voters out, both Republicans and Democrats, because turnout matters. And then they're going to start investing in those systems. It is a very, very difficult thing, though, as, you know, someone who's pushing for different policies to say, we want you all to invest in good infrastructure to, you know, make sure the rolls are up to date. And we want you to pay poll workers more because there's an aging poll worker workforce that we're not getting folks out to work the polls. And those are things that as citizens, we don't really ever ask them to do. You know, we don't know how much a poll worker, you know, the average citizen probably doesn't know how much you get for working the polls for 12 hours. But if you up that and all of a sudden you make your infrastructure better where your driver's license systems are automatic, like all of those things take resources. We aren't pushing for that because that's more resources that go to that instead of something else. And the politicians aren't pushing for it because why should they? They're fine with the 21 or 20.5% of people that showed up. So I think those two things have to happen. We have to really show them that turnout matters. And again, District 2 is going to help with that. Local elections are going to help with that. But we also have to start, you know, really speaking to the value of good government. Not big government, small government, but just whatever size, just good government. That you should have automatic updates to your roles with good software and good infrastructure systems, secure systems, right? All of those things that matter, you know, that are nonpartisan, apolitical, like we want secure systems that everybody can go vote and do. So I think those two things are the kind of the things that I would hope to see.
I want to invite Rashmi to the microphone. Rashmi, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. As the civic engagement liaison for a local mosque, I personally believe it's important for various groups to robustly and civilly engage with all elected officials, especially Republicans, given the reality of our state. Most recently, in light of the catastrophic events in Palestine and Israel, the American Muslim community has demonstrated increased civic engagement, such as phone banking to elected officials, scheduling constituent meetings, and the uncommitted movement in both Michigan and Minnesota. Locally in the Birmingham metro area, we are looking to build foundational and friendly relationships with our representatives, so at a minimum, they know who we are and the various ways we're serving our great state of Alabama. Even though it's unlikely that our representatives will change their official position on a given issue, we are hopeful, God willing, that in due course, there will be increased nuance and thoughtfulness in their positions as a result of our relationship building efforts. Thank you for the opportunity.
Rashmi, thanks. I mean, that raises this question about the types of work you're doing, Taffney and Stephanie, and at the grassroots level, how are you working together to accomplish some of your goals, if you are?
No, what you just said, thank you for that, is the bottom line. It is about building relationships. These candidates are going to come in, they're going to hit hard, and after the election, they're going to be gone. It's up to the League of Women Voters, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the ACLU, the NAACP. It's up to all of us to stay consistent, stay on the ground, not just at election time. We have to remind them constantly that their vote matters in their municipal elections. I mean, we were asking Pete earlier about voting in the smaller elections. Some of these municipalities, there might be a couple thousand people registered and a few hundred who show up. It's very easy to make a difference in that election, but nobody's talking to these very small communities. And I think if we start talking to these kids and giving them the data, these are smart young folks that we're dealing with here. If we start giving them the data and say, hey, you know, get your whole neighborhood to show up, get your, you know, you graduated last year, call your senior class, get everybody to register, get them there. A couple dozen votes can make a difference. They can make the choice. We just had such a fabulous week engaging with the youth. This past weekend was the 59th Jubilee in Selma, the anniversary of the bridge crossing, and the League of Women Voters partnered with the NAACP, and we had hundreds of students came in from around the state for a program. They were college students, and some of them were high school students, and by and large, the 3 hours was driven and led by the students. We gave them 3-4 minutes at a time and just up and down, up and down, up and down to speak their piece, speak their mind, tell us what they were thinking, tell us about how they're building power among their peers, on their campuses, with their friends. They're doing really incredible work, but we can't drop the ball and leave them behind after this election. It's our job, the civic engagement organizations, to keep at it.
I mean, part of what I'm hearing from all of you is that the work of building engagement and educating people about the options they do have and what power their vote does hold, it's not a one-time thing. We're talking a long-term, incremental process that has to be consistent, and it can't just be in a presidential election year. Mm-hmm. It has to be around every election, every local office that's up for grabs. That conversation has to be ongoing.
Yeah, and it also has to be around the issues that are important to them. We've done a couple of focus groups at SPLC with young folks and listened to some of the issues that are important to them, right? Housing, affordable housing is important to them, right? Access to adequate health care, specifically here in Alabama, the expansion of Medicaid is important to young folks. Quality education, you know, K through 12 and access, that's important to them. And so those are some key issues that are really important to our young people. And so, again, engaging and mobilizing around those issues and giving voice to those issues and how they elevate that at the local level.
I think, too, the relationship building is such a key thing. So I'm glad you brought this up. And to your point, anybody, like politicians, students, anybody that we're talking about, it is that kind of consistent engagement and the two-way conversation. Just as much as voters can't stand a politician, you know, coming in and asking for a vote and then leaving, they're also just as suspect about organizations coming in and saying, hey, election's coming up, we need you to volunteer, don't forget how important your vote is, and then they're out the door and they didn't ask what their needs were or what their issues were. And so I've been struck just about how, you know, across the state, both everyone in the policy space is starting to recognize, you know, we've got to be in touch with the voters. We've got to be in touch with the people consistently, not just every November, but we need to understand them a little bit better just to show that we're here. And that's for politicians and the advocacy space too. So a credit to Stephanie and Taffany's organizations, because I do think they are really getting out in the communities and keeping that kind of those touch points consistently. But it's interesting you're talking about relationship building, because those work for voters, they work for politicians, just really anybody.
I want to welcome Jordan to the microphone. Hi, Jordan, go ahead.
So I'm one of those young voters. This will be my third presidential election. And I do feel very disconnected from a lot of the candidates, both local and also all the way up on the national level. And even with the presidential election, as you all were saying earlier, there's a lack of competition between the two parties. I see Joe Biden and Donald Trump as very similar candidates, and neither of them appeal to me and what I want. But also, since you mentioned being here last year with the anniversary of the 1963 Children's March, last year was also the 60th anniversary of the 16th Street Church bombing, and NPR did an article interviewing Lisa McNair, who is the younger sister of Denise McNair, and in that article, she talks about how much hasn't changed since the 1960s, and how disappointed she was in that, and I see this as something that I related to as well. But I try to stay hopeful, and one of the ways like I find it is focusing on what Ruha Benjamin says in her book, Viral Justice. She like always focused on the big picture until she realized that's not going to work. And so for me, being a young voter, I focus more on what I can do on an individual level, what I can do within my community, and the changes I can make, the positive changes I can make outside of the polls, since I don't feel represented on the ballot.
Thank you for that comment. Well, I want to wrap on this comment we got from Lizzie. Lizzie texted, as a native Alabamian, I feel dismayed and angry by the increasing creep towards the creation of a Christian nationalist state where the suppression of personal autonomy, choice, and even history is enacted through benighted laws. There is now an assumption that everyone is a Trumper, at least where I live. So on one hand, I want to leave this state. However, there are wonderful and decent folks here trying to make a difference. So on the other hand, I don't want to give up on this state. It's a beautiful place in so many ways, and I want more people to move here and change this direction. How can we encourage people to come here and make real change? Stephanie?
Just remember that Alabama really is beautiful, and it is absolutely worth fighting for.
And Taffany, I'll give you the last word here. You mentioned you have a daughter who recently came back from Boston, and I'm sure you've had these conversations about whether she stays, so this is personal.
So I would love for her to stay. I stayed for the very reason that I believed Alabama was worth fighting for. I've traveled this country with SPLC, and oftentimes people are just like, why are you still there? And I firmly believe that Alabama is worth fighting for. It was a place that my grandmother tilled her hands in the ground. My grandmother raised 13 children after her husband died. And it is that resilience that I have, and it is that hope that I have when I think about Alabama and who I'm fighting for. And plus, I want her to stay here. I want her to stay close by. And she's talented, and I want her to use her talents for her home state.
That was Taffany English Ralph. She's the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Alabama State Office. Also with us, Stephanie Butler. She's the treasurer of the Alabama League of Women Voters and a board member of the Greater Birmingham League. And Pete Jones. He's a professor of public administration at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Thank you all. This conversation was produced by 1A's Jorgelina Manorea. 1A's Amanda Williams leads our Remaking America collaboration. And many thanks to WBHM staff for hosting us this week, and especially to Andrew Yeager, John Malone, Caroline Spears, and Birmingham City Schools' Devin Smith. We are here in Birmingham as part of our Remaking America collaboration with WBHM and five other public radio stations around the country. Remaking America is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. 1A comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until next time, I'm Jen White. Thanks for being here, and we will talk again soon.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Macmillan Audio. One of the most thought-provoking books about the Middle East, Thomas L. Friedman's From Beirut to Jerusalem, is now available as an unabridged audiobook featuring a new preface read by the author. Find it wherever audiobooks are sold. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.